Another Monday morning and another look down the road at what appear to be challenging economic numbers for both the U.S. economy and the global economy. Asian markets were down significantly this morning, and futures on the stock market, both for the Dow Industrials and the S&P 500, point to a lower open this morning. But with this level of volatility, it's almost impossible to know if the beginning of the day is going to look like the end of the day. And in the last 2 weeks, the list of companies announcing layoffs, which reads like a who's who of American corporate wealth. We've got Merck and Yahoo, General Electric, Xerox, Goldman Sachs, Whirlpool, Bank of America, Alcoa, Coca-Cola, all of the automakers, and nearly all of the airlines. When that's going on, it maybe is best to focus away from the numbers and to try to get a perspective from the consumer angle of where this economic tsunami is as it sweeps the world. And that's why we've asked Alvin Hall, financial consultant and author of Show Me the Money, to come to the studio and actually take a look at all things macro and micro in this economy. Of course, if this was a six-hour show, we could do all things. But we're only going to focus on what we can. Alvin, thanks so much for coming in.
Glad to be here this morning.
You know, let's talk about where is the wave. In the beginning, the beginning rumblings of all of this economic crisis involved house prices, declining property values, maybe people foreclosing on their mortgages. That's pretty easy for consumers to monitor. Now it's expanded considerably. Where do you think the wave is now? And from a consumer perspective, when does it hit the beach and maybe we start to turn around?
Well, right now the wave is happening in the new area of probably credit cards. As people lose their jobs and they're unable to make their credit card payments, very similar to the way they can't make their mortgage payments, they start to default on credit cards. Most people did not realize that the credit cards had been packaged like mortgages and also sold on around the world in very similar types of debt securities. So that's the next wave that's coming that people will see. When credit card defaults start, you'll see the banks get into even more trouble, and therefore other values will start to contract in the economy.
And I guess the attractiveness of these packaged securities from a credit card perspective is that you're not talking about 7% yields here. You're talking about 18% yields, 20% yields.
Yes.
That's the interest rate on my credit card.
Exactly. And most people only make the minimum payments every month. So you had a reasonably predictable cash stream, and notice I said reasonably predictable cash stream, that when these securities were rated by Moody's and Standard & Poor's, they predicted that the cash streams would be much more consistent than they're turning out to be. As the economy contracts and you're unable to make your credit card payment, which we know you will be able to make it, John.
You know that, huh?
Exactly.
Just by looking at me, you can tell.
I'll loan you the money.
Wow. I like the way you think, Alvin.
And what happens then? People start to default, and those securities also start to lose their value quickly.
What you've described is a wave that's working through the availability of credit, it seems.
Yes.
Is the impact of multiple credit defaults in the credit card realm going to mean that if I'm standing in line in the supermarket, that decline message is going to come up a lot more as I'm standing in line? That people are going to maybe be told, you know, we actually can't give you your groceries today, or you can't buy that TV, and that we're going to start seeing those declines more frequently.
Yes, we'll see the credit card companies start to restrict credit use. In fact, a friend of mine who has a credit card was told that his credit line was reduced from $20,000 down to $4,000 because they said they thought he was in an industry, i.e. financial services. He had a low-paying job relatively in that industry, and they said that they didn't think that he could carry that credit
anymore.
Wait
a minute. There was nothing about his behavior that caused them to do that?
No,
they basically recalculated the stuff on the books.
Exactly. But you see that you saw that happen in Britain about a year ago, where both Egg and Citibank decided to willy-nilly cancel, I think it was 300,000 or some unbelievable number of credit cards, just because they deemed the people to be at risk.
And that's really common, though. Haven't many credit card companies at this point reduced the maximum on some of their customers just across the board, regardless of behavior?
Yes, they look at where you charge. If you charge, for example, at a discount store more than you do at a high-end store, they look at what financial services industry you're in, whether you're in banking or investment banking, or whether you're working in some related industry. And then they say, this person may be at risk given their credit card payments in the past, so we need to protect ourselves now.
And there's no regulation on that.
No, there's no regulation.
They can cut you off. They can just basically say, sorry, we don't know. They can get rid of their own toxic assets without any sort of federal oversight.
Thanks to that wonderful change in the law in the 70s that got rid of usury laws in America.
Right.
Many people don't remember the time when interest rates were very high, and New York City had a law that capped interest rates. So therefore, on credit cards, you could only go up to a certain amount, but interest rates in the general economy was very high. Citibank was among the early banks that led the movement to get rid of usury laws in America, and they succeeded with Congress.
And now it's almost reversed. It's the credit card interest rates that are really high and the other ones that are really, really low. Mortgage rates are relatively low.
Exactly.
Let's talk about interest rates for a moment. What is the story? I mean, you've got the dollar rising.
Yes.
You've got Treasury notes going to zero as people try to park their money safely. But mortgage rates seem to be spiking, and the difficulty for consumers who actually need to take out loans seem like they're just going to get worse.
I think they're going to get worse because the banks are scared. The banks made bad loans. Now the pendulum is swinging all the way in the opposite direction, and they're saying, oh, we need to be even more restrictive now than we've been in the past. And so interest rates are going up because they're putting such tight strictures on everyone.
And so what does that do for the housing crisis? Clearly, it's critical that homeowners who are not going to be able to pay those mortgages in the next year or two get some kind of help. What do you expect to see there?
I expect to see banks attempt to negotiate with you and you individually, but I don't think they really have an overall plan to help people deal with the mortgage crisis at all.
Well,
I think banks are really looking at it on an individual basis.
Does Congress need to step in?
I think Congress does need to step in, and essentially, I hate to use this word, but they need to make them come up with a plan to help people who are on that edge, because it's very clear that in America, the feeling of security, the feeling of well-being is very much related to the value of your house.
Right.
For decades, it was a way of enforced savings in America. The concept of buying a house was that you would put your money in a house over time and it would go up. Gradually in the past decade or so, housing has become for many an investment, a dangerous shift in the attitude toward property. So I think banks need to help people go back and look at housing as a way of enforced savings.
Well, you say banks are sort of going at this piecemeal. We spoke with David Leonhardt of the New York Times last week, who said that if we were to bail out individual mortgage holders, it would be insanely expensive on the order of many, many trillions of dollars. In the meantime, an industry has sort of grown up which claims that it can get you the deal that the Feds got or that AIG got through dealing with debt elimination companies. There's a company called Debt America. There's all, credithealth.com. They're all taken.
Yes.
And I don't know anything about any of the individual companies, but how do you assess this industry making claims that they can get you a bailout deal that's commensurate with what AIG got, for instance?
No one can deliver a miracle in this economy. So if people are telling you that we can get your credit right, that we can go out and help you, you need to read the fine print. In some cases, they'll try to attach your outstanding debt to your house or some other property. Sometimes all they do is send out letters. Basically,
what do you mean send out letters?
Send out letters to your creditors saying, help us to restructure your debt.
Well, you can do that on your own.
You can do all of this on your own. But John, the problem is that when people get very stressed, they want there to be a father figure or some authority figure to help them make a decision.
Do you play that role sometimes?
Well, I play that role more as a psychologist, I would say. I sit down and say, calm yourself down and think about a way you can structure this. All you have to come up with is a step-by-step plan, and you don't have to accomplish this plan every day. You can do one task every single day, and you're moving forward. But I think most people think, I want to hand this off to somebody else who's going to take the pressure off my mind and make me feel good. And that it's that desire to feel better about the situation and give up the responsibility that drives people to these companies. And they're going to be successful, and people will be hurt. And we'll watch again as they take, millions out from people, and then the government will come in and say, oh, I'm so sorry this happened. And now we'll regulate them after the fact.
So your view, and based on your experience, and you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, for a long time.
Is the only way to really feel good about that pile of whatever it is that's driving you crazy financially is to pick up a shovel and start taking care of it one shovelful at a time. And there are ways to do that.
There are ways to do it. And anyone can structure a plan for themselves. They just need to have the courage to pick up the phone and start negotiating and be firm, be consistent. And the key point is only to make a promise that you know you can keep.
Mm-hmm. Well, Alvin Hall, as you say, and the banks have a strong incentive to actually negotiate with you if you do pick up the phone and offer that promise you can keep. Alvin Hall is a financial consultant and author of Show Me the Money. He's in the studio with us this hour. And, it's hope. Maybe not for AIG. Maybe not for Bear Stearns.
One step at a time.
And the industry.
AIG and I think Bear Stearns are maybe okay. They've got the government on their
side. Indeed, they do.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.